This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. The free flow of goods across great distances was taken for granted in an increasingly globalized world. But COVID-19 threw a spanner in the works as countries went into various stages of lockdowns. Suddenly, global supply chains were disrupted, but quickly resumed as shipping companies adjusted and powered through the pandemic. So today we speak to Mr. Ooi Lian Hin, the chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia, otherwise known as SAM, to find out how resilient this industry is and what needs to be done to make the Malaysian shipping industry a top global player. Good morning, Mr. Ooi. Thank you for coming on The Breakfast Grill. Now, let's start with some context and background on SAM. So you have 46 members, which ship almost 90% of all cargo throughput in Malaysian ports. With that, clearly an authority to discuss what were the key challenges faced by your members to operate in this post-COVID-19 era. So why don't we start with telling us what those key challenges were?
Well, in 2020, I think the key challenge with the pandemic is that if there's one word to describe it, is disruption. There has been a disruption in the supply chains. It started with China having a lockdown, which actually interrupted a lot of intermediate goods that affected production lines in other parts of Asia. So we had a serious problem in the first quarter. Then as we move into the second quarter, we had the rest of the world going into a complete lockdown, almost complete lockdown. You know, that actually resulted in a huge drop in trade volumes, and that most shipping lines were then looking at reducing capacity in order to balance capacity with demand. And that meant that a lot of blank sailings, we ended up laying up ships in various parts of the world, and also the containers were off-hired, and a lot of containers were kept in cheap places like Malaysia, where you know we offer very cheap options to container carriers for storing their containers. And as we move into the quarter three, we saw a big resumption in trade, particularly started off with the Trans-Pacific trade, where China, being the production factory of the world, started producing. They recovered, the economy there recovered. And we see again a further surge in quarter four with the rest of the world. So shipping lines have actually resumed all their blank sailings. Example, in quarter two, the idle fleet was hovering about 12%. Now it's only about 1.5%, which basically means all container ships are being deployed as we speak today. There has been a huge disruption in the container turnaround because of shortage of drivers in the inland places like in the US, Australia, and certain parts of Europe because of the pandemic. And that has also contributed to the port congestions worldwide. You know, in Portland, we have a congestion. In Singapore, you know, its average waiting time for a berth of ships is about 3 days to 4 days. That itself is another disruption again, because that affects the overall container turnaround. And you have situations where in the beginning of the quarter one, quarter two, where warehouses are full because, you know, they need to stock up the goods there because the market is not taking it. And suddenly now you have a situation which is very much a reverse, where a lot of cargo has been left at the docks because there's not enough capacity to meet the huge increase in demand. At the same time, you also see a situation where the air freight business, because of the grounding of 90% of the world's planes, have moved to the ocean freight. So that has also contributed to the surge in the container volume. And I don't see that returning back to normal that soon, because I think the restrictions in global travel is still there. And for the recovery, the airline industry will take a much longer period because a lot of airlines are already in a very bad financial situation.
Okay, but Mr. Ooi, one of your members, which is CMCGM, which is the world's fourth largest shipping alliance, they said they won't be taking any new bookings till the last week of December. So realistically, when will service return to normal? When will all these bottlenecks ease?
Well, most of the carriers are predicting that after Chinese New Year, you will see a sort of a easing up of the situation, particularly on the container equipment, because factories in China are still producing containers as we speak. But you cannot say the same for the vessel, because to build a vessel, you need about 3 years from the time you started negotiation until you see the vessel on the water. So you're not going to see this vessel situation being corrected. But I believe that the container situation should somehow be corrected by the second half of 2021. But then again, this is a great expense because the container prices have also shot up to the ceiling and the carriers are opting to lease these containers. But the leasing rate has also doubled. And also the fact that the leasing companies are also very smart. They are also asking for a longer period of lock-in, like 8 years now. So in other words, you take a position right now, but you cannot get out of the position until 8 years later. So this will be quite an increase in cost for the carriers as well.
But then, Mr. Ui, would you say that actually for some of your members, especially those that are doing container shipping, because your members also include players who are involved in dry bulk or oil shipping, because your sector or your industry is actually one of the winners in this pandemic, if I'm correct, freight charges have actually increased quite significantly as a result of withdrawal of supply by many of the shippers out there. So 2020 may be a financially rewarding year for some of your players. I mean, Bloomberg, I know, estimates that liner pricing is up 32% in 2020 with Trans-Pacific rates up by 50%. So it's going to be a good year for many of your members?
Yes, I believe it will be an unprecedented year. Although the first half of the year was no good, but the recovery in quarter three and quarter four was very, very good, as you have correctly stated. But it's purely demand and supply, you know, similar to the glove industry, but I think the glove industry is doing even better. So it's purely a demand and supply situation. And shipping companies, we are very sensitive to the demand and supply curve.
How long do you think then this good times will last? Will it roll into 2021? Would it be a better year, especially since the reality is that shipping is correlated with global trade and growth? And I think most of us are expecting a recovery next year.
Well, the forecast from WTO is that in 2021, they are forecasting a 7.2% increase in global trade. That should basically augur well for the container shipping industry. I just mentioned to you earlier, whilst we see a correction of the container supply, because factories are still churning out containers every day, well, we can't say the same for ships, because in the medium term, between 1 to 2 years, we are not going to see a lot of new buildings coming in. By the time you start negotiating and then by the time you see the ship on the water, it's 3 years later. So the supply of vessels, I think, will still be relatively tight. And that has also pushed up the charter rate for vessels. In fact, it's double. In some cases, even more than double for certain size of ships.
But Mr. Ui, there's also been a recent dispute about freight charges. Claims by the Malaysian National Shippers Council, which argued that liners, so some of your members, are profiteering by imposing exorbitant charges on the merchants. And I think SAM's defense was that some of your players aren't doing well. But that's not the case now, is it?
Well, it depends on when you ask me. Like, if you're talking about the first quarter, they were all still burning cash. In the second quarter, continue to burn cash. Third quarter was recovering now. Of course, they're all laughing to the bank. But this is purely demand and supply.
So are those exorbitant charges still continued to be imposed?
I won't call it exorbitant because it is all a snowball effect. You see, when you have a situation where your container turnaround is longer, you have to increase your fleet size of the container in order to support the sailing program that you have. So that means that you have to go out and either acquire or lease more boxes. So that basically increases your cost too. At the same time, the charter rates for vessels have more than doubled. That means the operator has to pay a higher charter fee. So all this is a snowball effect. So it's very similar to what you're seeing in the glove industry. Suddenly we have all the four top glove, all these glove factories. The market cap is already so big that they are even bigger than the banks. So this is purely a market force. You can say, I don't like to use the word profiteering, but of course in business you're supposed to make a profit when the time is right. So I think the definition of profiteering is important, unless there's a collusion or cartel-like nature where they try to collectively profiteer, then it's profiteering. But otherwise, it's purely demand and supply.
Meanwhile, we have seen reports that many seafarers have had their service extended after many months at sea because of the restrictions placed, due to COVID-19. This, of course, has had an impact on the safety and health of seafarers and also the ships themselves. So what is happening on this front now, though?
It's a big problem because even Malaysia today, we still have big problems with crew changes and all that. And of course, if you are a seafarer, you can understand, you know, you're not seeing your family for 6 months already. Recently, we had a case where the captain just refused to continue. He wants to get off. So we had to accommodate that. But all this is a great expense to the ship operator, because why? He has to pay for very high crew repatriation costs now, because the airline cost is more than double. And he has to comply with the SOP of quarantine at the origin of the crew. And also when they come to where they're going to sign off, another 14 days. And then they have to do the COVID test, not once, but twice. So all these are additional costs. But the key is that the crew on board the ship, I also sympathize with them now, because they really are stuck in the vessel. They cannot get out of the ship. Even when the ship is at the port of call, they are not allowed to disembark. So all these actually make it very difficult for them. And we're still trying to sort out this problem now.
So currently, there's no one standard practice across the industry, because as much as we don't want global supply chains disrupted, shipping companies are, like you say, making quite extraordinary profit during this pandemic. But it should also not come at the expense of seafarers, right?
No, we don't. There's no relation between the profit that the shipping company make and the seafarers. Seafarers is a case where all countries in the world are very careful about trying to protect their own region from any external people coming to, you know, to spread the disease. So it is more of the restrictions of travel, restrictions of crew change that is affecting the crew.
Yeah, but you just mentioned that there are extra expenses in terms of repatriating the crew. So is there a reluctance to do so because of the expense?
No, we don't do that because we try to accommodate the crew change. But it is more the restrictions that we are faced with that make it very, very difficult for us to do it.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Mr. Wee Lian Hin, Chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia. When we come back, what needs to be done to make our country a major player in the shipping industry? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9. Joining me on the Breakfast Grill this morning is Mr. Wee Lian Hin, Chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia. Just before the break, we were talking about how the shipping companies powered through the pandemic and what growth can we expect in 2021. Now, Mr. Wee, let's shift this discussion to specifically the Malaysian shipping industry. I want to reference the Malaysian Shipping Master Plan, which is from 2017 to 2022. Now, its purpose is to make the Malaysian shipping industry become more resilient and competitive in the national, regional, and even the global context. Now, with 3 years of it being in existence, has this plan helped the industry at all?
I think this plan is still a plan.
Was there much discussion with the stakeholders before this plan came about?
There were some discussions, but yeah, we can have a plan. But I think what is important is the implementation of the plan. So up to now, I think we have been lacking on the implementation. For instance, if you talk about the cabotage policy, you know, 3 years already, we have given exemption of the cabotage policy for the domestic trade between West and East Malaysia. But has that actually produced a desired result? Prices of goods still escalating in East Malaysia, despite the fact that the cabotage, which was blamed for the high cost of living in Sabah and Sarawak, but it's exactly not true, because it has been proven by many, many studies, including our own EPU, as well as the World Bank, that concluded that cabotage has got nothing to do with the prices of goods in East Malaysia. It's other factors that is contributing to the escalation in the price.
Okay, and since you brought up cabotage, right, we do know recently there was this issue with regards to the repair of submarine cables. And there was, I guess, a circular written by some of the big technology companies saying that this is to our detriment in terms of the consumers and there's been a delay in terms of the repair. What do you say about that, though?
Well, there are two sides of the coin. I mean, if you ask me, as a country, we must be able to develop the capabilities to repair our own undersea cables, because this is, to me, a very strategic interest. We cannot be dependent on the foreign operators all the time. But having said that, if, for instance, there's not enough local players, then there is still a provision in the cabotage policy that you can apply for an exemption, as what Masa has mentioned. But perhaps the process of getting this exemption, which I think the ministry is also looking into as to how to make it more efficient, where it takes not so many days, shorten the processing time so that those people that need to engage foreign players to come and repair the cables can be done efficiently. But I would say that in the longer term, it is important for Malaysian companies to be able to develop those competency so that we don't depend on foreigners when it comes to critical things like this.
Yeah, but some would argue that our policies, including the shipping one, are too protectionist in nature. And ultimately, we are talking about an increasingly globalized world with competitive pressures. So after a while, does it make sense to continue to protect our domestic industry if in the first place they are not competitive?
I think that is a myth to think that our Malaysian companies are not competitive. You can always put a clause there. If you're not competitive, you can still go to a foreign operator. Let me just say, for example, the East Malaysian trade, which is already 3 years, because the government in July of 2017 actually granted an exemption. So we have some foreign players who have come into the market then and took advantage of this exemption. But where are they today? Because of the tight situation and the yield from East Malaysia is not so good, they are also either withdrawing from the market or increasing rates by threefold to the point that the customers cannot ship, are coming back to us. Now imagine that luckily for the East Malaysians, in these last 3 years, the domestic operator was not killed by the foreign operator. If we were already eliminated by then, we would now be at the mercy of the foreign operator. And that means that they have to pay more to ship their goods to East Malaysia. There will be disruption in supply chains. And at the end of the day, the consumers will have to pay more in this measure at a time where they are going through a pandemic. So you see the importance of a cabotage regime in terms of national security. So that is exactly why every country in the world has a cabotage regime, because this is the national security that we're talking about.
And Mr. Wu, is this, this discussion also in part due to the fact that, the shipping industry has seen the creation of major alliances and also a lot of consolidation? So when you think about it, the three major alliances, so 2M, Ocean, the Alliance, they command 81% of global market share. So perhaps how best can our country push back on, some would say, these quite large monopolistic cartels?
I think I would not agree to say monopolistic, because if anything at all, the shipping business, the reason for what you're seeing today, this consolidation, has been due to the fact that they were over-competitive to the point of destruction, because they just couldn't survive. They had to rationalize, they had to merge, they had to consolidate. Certain players had to go out. And that's what you're seeing in any major, mature kind of industry where consolidation takes shape, because of the need to reduce your cost, of the need to, combine resources. Take, for instance, the three Japanese carriers, NYK, Mitsui O.S.K. or MOL, and K-Line. They had to merge their container operations into one organization called ONE, Ocean Network Express, because standing alone, they don't have the size that matter. So they had to combine forces in order to be able to reduce and rationalize their costs. So it's a highly competitive business. To say that it's monopolistic is totally not true. Because where we are today is because of over-competition. And the industry has gone through almost 3 decades of that kind of competition to the point that in some ways it has been destructive. It is destroyed. Even the German KG system in terms of the asset play. So today, one of the problems that you have shortage of ships because there's an absence of new investments into container ships by those kind of asset players.
Is that also the reason why we have seen a reduction in terms of Malaysian registered vessels? Because basically the return on investment was so low in the past. So is it possible that we will see kind of a revival for Malaysian ship owners?
Well, Malaysia has never been very big. The biggest company that we ever had into container shipping was MISC. And I think they made the right decision to exit it because it was a very difficult industry. I personally think that because of this pandemic, which has actually made shipping companies realize that they can actually operate profitably if only they practice balancing capacity, supply with demand, and restraining from doing destructive pricing. So I think there's an opportune time for the global container shipping company to have a look to have a reset of their business model. And in many aspects, you have a situation also where shippers have become very selective. They want food grade container. They want this type of container. And then suddenly, equipment is very tight. They take everything. So long as you got container also, they can ship it in. So I think there's an opportunity for the shipping industry to have a reset.
Okay, and Mr. Wu, how best can we then make Malaysian ports attractive? Because that's also one of the key initiatives of the Malaysian Shipping Master Plan. Because from what I gather, from the review of marine transport by the UN, Klang and Tanjung Berlepas are 12 and 18 in terms of global market share. And actually, Klang has topped in transshipment in Southeast Asia. But at the same time, this does not compensate for volumes lost to Singapore, which is number 2 in the world. So what are we doing wrong or perhaps not enough?
Firstly, I must say that actually we have done very well in terms of developing our ports to be global hub ports. You must understand that actually Port Klang, in comparison to Singapore, in terms of location, is not that strategic as Singapore. Although they are in the Straits of Malacca, but if you're looking at a hub and spoke concept, whereby if you need to deploy a feeder vessel from, say, Jakarta or from Thailand into Singapore, compared to Port Klang, the distance is actually longer because you have to circumvent the Singapore up to Port Klang, so there's an additional nautical distance. But despite this strategic location not being so good, I think Port Klang has done very well in developing itself as a transshipment hub. And likewise, Port of Tanjung Pelapas. But Pelapas actually share the same strategic location with Singapore. So we have come a long way, right? But of course, sometimes we always end up with some situations whereby suddenly out in the blue, the customs say new ruling like that. So it affects our transshipment business. But most of this, I think, can be resolved. That's why Sam is here. We have been speaking up on behalf of the shipping industry in trying to resolve some of these interfaces with the government agencies to streamline the transshipment arrangements.
What else would you like from the government to kind of help the industry then?
So far, they are doing the right things. I would say the government has been very supportive of the shipping industry. And I think it's more of the understanding that we are very sensitive to the demand and supply. Now, I know that the Shippers Association, they have been complaining a lot. They complain to domestic trade. They complain to MYCC. But we are not a cartel. We basically operate on a free market environment. And I think this is where the government must also be fair in looking at us. And because very often the government tend to listen more to the exporter association like FMM or MNSC. And then we are being blamed for things that is not true. Because we don't collude. We are not a cartel. Cartels have long gone. You know, we were a cartel many, many years ago, but not anymore. So it's a free market. So today, if the glove industry can make that kind of money during the good demand, why is it the shipping company not allowed to do that?
On that note, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me on the Breakfast Grill this morning was Mr. Ooi Lian Hin, Chairman of the Shipping Association of Malaysia. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.